In a time where parents have the weight of 1,000 decisions on their shoulders and every step is like walking in quicksand, adventure's probably not in your focus. However, research shows families who adventure are more resilient and have significantly healthier minds and bodies. The purpose of this podcast is to help families connect through simple and authentic adventure experiences. Welcome to Ordinary Sherpa, your online community designed to help you connect, reach your summit, and create meaningful adventure experiences with your family. Hello, and welcome to Ordinary Sherpa. I'm your host, Heidi Dusick. Today's episode is going to dive into camping. I feel like camping is one of those icons of adventure. If you were to look up the profile picture of adventure, often you'd see a tent, a campfire, maybe some s'mores, some stars under the sky, something that just resembles the outdoors. And camping has been one of the easiest entry points for me into adventure, into a life of adventure, and to create these magical, simple moments with my family. Today's episode is really devoted to camping as a broad umbrella, but then more specifically, diving into when you're ready to rent an RV, what are the things you look for? Because in 2020, our magic came in camping, and we had the luxury of renting a few RVs and having some pretty awesome experiences as a family. As we go through this episode, I'll kind of unveil some of those secrets that we found in renting a camper and why they were so magical. Before I go there, though, I really want to acknowledge this community is about the Sherpa aspect. I don't want to ever lose sight that the Sherpas are the people who help others reach their summit. We are here as an online community to help families reach summits together. It's not really my tagline, but there's a secondary aspect to that. While we want to inspire you to connect as a family through adventure, through simple and whatever adventure looks like to you, right? It's not my definition of adventure, it's yours. We want to be here and support you in that process. So I want to give a shout out to anyone who has left a review on the Ordinary Sherpa podcast. You have no idea how generous those thoughts and words are. So I want to take a moment and just honor that and appreciate it and show my gratitude. It is one of the single most beneficial ways for a podcast to get exposed to a broader audience is through written reviews on Apple Podcasts. So I'm going to take this moment and read a written review today from Cultivated Learner writes, "Adventure is out there. I just discovered this podcast and it's so fun. During this crazy pandemic, it is so important to get out and create adventures, big or small, with your family and quarantines. Make sweet memories together and listen to this podcast for ideas. You won't be sorry." Well, thank you, Cultivated Learner. This is exactly the purpose of Ordinary Sherpa, is to give you ideas, but also to help foster that community of adventure and to create those really magical moments with your family. Thank you so much for taking the time and for listening. Camping has always had a special place in my heart in terms of what I recall looking back at my own childhood experience. I've had everything from the large family gatherings where there's a lot of different families gathering together and sleeping in one big campsite and just getting to know people out in the wilderness and having some unique experiences. If you listen to episode 2 on why adventure and what the meaning of adventure is for us, it's not about necessarily the epic adventures. While those things are always fun and they'll tell great stories for years to come, it's really about stretching yourself. It's about getting uncomfortable. And for so many people, the uncomfortable thing has to do with sleeping on the ground, getting out of the normal routine. Let's just say that, because sleeping on the ground is one of those things that I don't really want to do anymore. I've done it. I'm beyond that. And I don't know, something about hitting 40 apparently turned my willingness to sleep on the ground anymore, perhaps. But there's something uncomfortable about it, and you have to work through those things. And camping, I think, is one of those easy entry points into discomfort where you can experience things together as a family. It's pretty low cost, and it doesn't necessarily have to be real elaborate or sophisticated. You don't have to have all the skills. There's an entire community. There are usually people around that are willing to help, and I just think it's a great entry point into adventure, especially for families. When my husband and I first started dating, camping was one of those things that we could afford. We loved to travel, but the reality was our budget wasn't necessarily in line with my ideal expectations or experiences. So we had to somehow create these magical moments, and camping made that really affordable for us. It was very common for us to get together with friends. We started a tradition, I think 12 years ago, with some of his high school friends that every Memorial Day, no matter what, I mean, I've had surgeries, we had babies involved. No matter what, on Memorial Day weekend, we all tried to at least get to one campsite and spend the weekend together. That has been one of those defining moments, I think, in our marriage and in our relationship, was that we had this time together that was just unplanned time. Very little was expected. We've learned each other's strengths through the years. And trust me, these are not all bright, shining moments. There were a lot of fights and arguments and things of that nature. You learn a lot when you're that close together for a long period of time. But that's helped us grow as well in our relationship. So camping, I think, offers that natural sense of being uncomfortable in certain times. I can't tell you how many times we've camped in the rain. And that in and of itself makes you hardy. It just gives you thick skin. It might make you bitter, but it also makes you come home and appreciate what you have. There's nothing quite like coming home and taking that first shower where you can smell the campfire smoke coming out of your hair and your hands and your feet are somewhat dirty and gritty. I remember giving the kids the bath where it was just like, oh my gosh, this is so disgusting. And yet how amazing at the same time. It's this moment of like, ooh, we don't necessarily need to go 4 days without a bath, but it's okay. Life is okay. We don't always have to be prim and proper and perfect because we aren't, right? Life can get dirty and messy and sometimes magic is in the dirt. In terms of adventure, adventure is really stretching yourself. It's really getting uncomfortable. It's experiencing something new and different. And if you can do that with your family, that's ideal. So camping is kind of one of those icons. We are a family of five. My kids are 10, 8, and 5 currently. But we also have a nearly 80-pound dog that travels with us when we camp with a kennel. And the tent just became too tight for us. It became more uncomfortable than joyful, I think. And when we crossed that line, we realized, I think the zipper breaking on the last tent was like, okay, it's time. It's time. But we were not ready to make an investment in the next thing. We didn't want to chase after that. Rather than making another investment in a tent or a camper or whatever that next thing was going to be, we wanted to try it out a little bit and have a better sense of what is it that we actually were looking to invest in rather than just jumping into the next trendy thing that came our way. That was how we were introduced to RV rentals. Just for some vocabulary, when I say RV, I was really meaning the whole sense. In terms of camping, let me just break this up just a little bit further. I think there's really five categories of camping. There's the simple sleep out, where you take a sleeping bag and a pillow. You might have an air mattress to make it a little bit more comfortable, maybe a tarp. And you sleep out under the stars. The next category I would say is tent camping. So you have something, some type of enclosure that helps protect you from the rain. You can kind of protect your items. It's inside something so animals aren't just freely walking into your space. It's not really that adventurous, you guys. Just I don't love having the raccoons in my space. But inevitably, we would have issues with that, right? Because you have your garbage and your food and everything like that. So a tent gave you a little bit more privacy in that space, but it's still pretty much roughing it in my definition. Then you get into various forms of campers. There's the tent camper or the pop-up camper. These are typically soft-sided and you're up off the ground. Typically, you have electricity, a sofa, some beds. Like it's a little bit more sophisticated, but it's not glamorous by any means. It just gives you a little bit more space, a little bit more luxury. But again, it's more simple in its definition. I guess there's a hybrid category, so hard walls that have fold-out beds, but it's more of a travel trailer for me. A travel trailer or a camper is usually a pull behind, so you need a vehicle to tow it. And that's more of almost like a tiny house. You have all the accommodations of a house. You've got water and electricity and a kitchen and a bathroom and beds. In many cases, there's entertainment systems and TVs, things of that nature that are also available. So you can be as simple or as luxurious as you want to be. There's also what's called a fifth wheel. So those are, again, different types of campers that are pull behind. You need a special truck. It gives you more space. So it might be like the supersized travel trailer in some definitions. It's just a little bit bigger. It offers a little bit more capacity, especially for larger families. I know a lot of people who full-time RV that have a fifth wheel. And then you go into what I would consider an RV or a motorhome. And those are where your vehicle and your camper are combined in one. So you're essentially driving around in a mini house and you may tow a vehicle or tow something else. But for the most part, you're driving your house. Everything is all in one space. There's three different classes of RVs, Class A, Class B, and Class C. And I don't know why these are classified in this order. I think they should have consulted me. Like, the Class B is actually the smallest, and those are your camper vans. Those you may have seen, like a VW wagon or a Mercedes, the Sprinter vans. Those are things that are generally smaller in design, and they just have the basics, a small kitchen, a bed. It essentially is the basics of having a tent and a vehicle all smashed into one. The second one that I'll refer to is a Class C. And a Class C is a little bit bigger. I think they go from like 24 feet up to maybe 32 feet, just to give you a size. So again, that's your vehicle and your camper all in one. You're not trailering anything. It gives you a little bit more flexibility to move about while you're driving. There's seatbelts in all of the couches, so people are encouraged to be buckled. But it does give you the flexibility. For example, we rent most often Class C RVs because if we're doing a long road trip, it gives us the ability to use the bathroom whenever we need to. And it also gives us the ability to move about a little bit more freely, to lay down on the bed if we needed to, rather than have to sit in a car seat for an extended period of time. We're out of car seats now, but that was just the analogy. And the third is a Class A. And Class A for me is what I traditionally thought of as the motorhome. These are the big rigs. These can get very luxurious, very expensive, and really hard to navigate because they are so big. Knowing your size limitations, they can get rather large. And so for some people, that's really intimidating. It's almost like driving a school bus. Oh, I should mention, there's a thing called schoolies too, where people convert school buses to campers or motorhome type things. So there's a lot of variety in what is available when it comes to camping. Depending on what your mindset was or the experiences you had, maybe as a family or as a child, or things you're exposed to, you might have your own mindset of what camping is. But I want to open that a little bit today and expose you to what the possibilities are. There are four places in particular that I would suggest, or that I'm most aware of, related to where you can rent a camper. One of them, and the first one I was introduced to, was through dealerships. A lot of camper dealerships or RV dealerships also have rental capabilities. Not all of them do it, so you'll have to call and inquire, and many of them don't even advertise it. But in our first and early experiences with renting a camper, we knew we wanted to keep going camping with our friends. We did not want to go buy another tent. We did not necessarily want to buy a camper. So we had this opportunity to just rent one. It was relatively inexpensive. So to give you a sense, a pop-up camper for Memorial Day weekend, this was a couple years ago. I don't know if prices have changed because of COVID, but it was $250 for the weekend. Now, it's a little less flexible in terms of deciding your pickup and your drop-off times because you're working around business hours. You're not working with an individual. And it's not necessarily flexible in terms of dropping it off or having it set up for you. It's really you get what you get and you don't throw a fit. Like, this is what it is. The second one that I'm most familiar with, and I see these at a lot of touristy type destinations. For example, when we are in Alaska or when we were in the Pacific Northwest, you saw all over the place were these entire business models related to RV rentals. Cruise America is one example. There's a bunch of them where that's all they do. That's their entire business model. And they maintain them, they take care of them. But generally speaking, I would say from my experience, I didn't love the branding all over them because everyone's like, oh, guess what? You're a tourist. And I don't know why. That's just one of those things for me. I found them to be really expensive and I didn't love everybody knowing that I was an out-of-towner, even though, like, yeah, you can look at my license plates, but for the most part, I don't really want you to know. I don't want to advertise the fact that I'm not from here and that I'm traveling around the country. It might be obvious, but I try to be a little bit more untouristy than that. The third and fourth options are related to the sharing economy. Things like Airbnb and Turo and things of that nature where you can rent someone else's item and then you use it for an extent, whatever time you need. And those two platforms that I highly recommend, and this is where we have gone for several years, is RV Share. And just to spell that out, it's RV, capital RV, S-H-A-R-E, so RV Share. And the other one is Outdoorsy, outdoors with a Y. Both of those platforms function very similar to an Airbnb or VRBO type experience where you are working with private families who own an RV and then you get to rent it when they're not using it. And those have been our most joyful experiences. I'm going to put some links in the show notes too, because I do have some referral codes so you can get a discount by using those links, just so you can check them out. What I want to dive into is, regardless of where you're renting from, I want to give you some insider tips on what to look for, what to be aware of, how to just do your due diligence to make sure you're going to create the best opportunity for your family, and know a couple of things that you should be asking either yourself or the host or the owner of the RV in advance so that you also have a really good experience while on the road. Things to look for when renting an RV, I would start with my most important one, and that is mileage. Early in the days of renting RVs, many of them charged a per mile expense, and it's usually in the 30 to 40 cents a mile, which gets really spendy really quick, especially if you're going to be taking a road trip. When we most recently have rented, we learned that some people who rent RVs offer unlimited mileage. So that has now become one of the filters I look for. And if it's not unlimited, I really have to know my route enough to know what the cost and expense would be, because without that, it gets really spendy really fast. And I'd like to keep our budget. Well, to give you an example, if in a traditional vacation experience where we are renting a Airbnb and a car, it's typically about $200 to $250 for both of those things per day in our budget. That's how it works. So that's the benchmark I use in terms of figuring out what it's going to cost us or how I budget for the RV rental. I know the car and the lodging would be about $250 a night. I'll start that as my price point and go down from there to see what the options are. So if you don't have unlimited mileage and you're still looking at that $250 price point, it gets really spendy. There's a couple of other things that you want to look at in terms of pricing that kind of get hidden if you're not careful. Things like the kitchenware. Some of them will require you to pay for pots and pans and silverware and coffee pots. And again, those things can add up really quickly. It's only $5 or $10, but if you're adding that to the whole package, it can get really spendy. Some will charge for bedding. Some will charge for generator usage. This is one that's optional because you should know whether you're going to be dry camping, meaning you aren't going to have hookups, electricity, sewer, water every night. If that's the case, you're going to want something because your battery will only last so long. It doesn't power things like your furnace and your air conditioning. So having a generator is extremely helpful for people who are going off grid a little bit, or boondocking, dry camping. It's got a lot of different names, but anyone who plans to do that, you're going to want to make sure you have a good generator and know what they're going to charge you. I again find we have had really good luck finding unlimited generator use. Oftentimes it's not too expensive. You'll maybe get 5 hours per night. That's probably sufficient. Again, we're a family of five and we camped in some pretty remote areas in the Pacific Northwest and found that we were comfortable at night. AC wasn't a big issue for us in the month of June, but that might depend on the climate that you're in, is how much generator usage do you need? Are you going to need the furnace? Are you going to need the AC? Those are the two critical ones. The water heater runs on a generator. So just know what the capacity is. And again, I can dive deep. If you want to come to Ordinary Sherpa Facebook group, in the Facebook group, I'd be more than happy to answer a lot of your questions following up on any of these items. The other thing I would look for, and this would probably be my number two thing, is just the sleeping arrangements. If you have to take down the dining room table every night for your kids to sleep, what does that do for you and your spouse, or what does that mean in terms of the experience overall? So we found, again, we rent a lot of Class Cs. That's our preferred arrangement because the kids can go up above on the bunk and they can go in the back bedroom. And usually that means we have space and time and a little more openness once the kids go to bed to just hang out and read or do any of those things without being too much of a disturbance to the kids that are sleeping. But also keep in mind, I don't necessarily want to jump up into a bunk bed at my age. It's just not as enjoyable. My kids are fine. But know who's in your party and what their comfort levels are. You don't want to be putting grandma up in a bunk bed at night and having to get her down in the middle of the night, even young kids. The fact that it's dark in the middle of the night and they may have to go to the bathroom and things are uncomfortable and unknown. So you don't necessarily want someone falling out of bed trying to just navigate their way to the bathroom. Some other things that are really important to me are just knowing what features are available, knowing your non-negotiables. I am not super comfortable driving large vehicles. And so for me, the backup camera was one of the more critical features that I was looking for, because I don't like backing things up, especially like trailers and things like that. So if I was going to be the off driver on a time when my husband needed a break, I just wanted that comfort, that peace of mind to know that I had a backup camera if I needed it. it didn't end up being a huge issue. The mirrors are pretty good, but I just want people to know what your limitations are and what you're comfortable with and build that into your search so that when you get in that moment, you don't realize, ooh, I'm really uncomfortable driving this. The next thing I would say that's really important is the drop-off pickup time and if there's any delivery costs. In one instance, this didn't actually happen because of COVID. We were scheduled to fly to Las Vegas and then we were renting an RV and doing the Mighty 5 Utah loop. And we looked for one specifically that had a free delivery and would do a pickup at an airport. Maybe that'll change as things start to open up. But it was not very common in our initial searches to have that. And we just didn't want to have to take all of our stuff with an Uber or with a taxi of some sort, because we're already a family of five. So it just gets kind of a pain to haul all of our stuff multiple times. The next thing that I would say in terms of priorities, what I'm looking for, especially if you're looking more locally and you're going to be pulling a travel trailer or camper of some sort or a pop-up, knowing the weight capacity, not only of the vehicle, but what's ideal for that camper. Just to give you a sense, my family as a whole, we're about 500 pounds. In one of them that we were looking at, the added capacity that we could have was 600 pounds. And we didn't quite get there until after we'd done all of this other searching and filtering. And we realized, like, that's not a lot of space for groceries and our luggage and any random equipment that we're bringing. It doesn't give you a lot of options for that engine to be functioning at its best capacity. Just something, this is probably not always the first thing I think of, but know the towing weight of your vehicle and also what is the weight of the camper that is allowed. And the last are more just kind of general practices when you're going into a rental agreement. I always, regardless if it's an RV or anything else, I always, always, always read the reviews thoroughly. And that is positive and negative because you find so many little tips. One of the things I found was that a lot of the campers didn't have toilet paper and they require you sometimes to buy special toilet paper. Well, in 2020, it was impossible to find toilet paper. So it was one of those silly things that I learned, and that was through a written review. I would not have thought to even ask that question of, like, do you offer toilet paper? It's just not usually on my checklist. Maybe it will be from now on. Those are some of the things, cleaning supplies and what's available. My last two are really around rental guidelines, would be to read the written reviews and to ask questions or additional resources. So if you're not really clear on what the layout is, ask the host to send you a picture. I had a host, and I'm sure he was kind of annoyed with me, but it ended up being a really good fit because I had asked such targeted questions on the front end. One example was I asked him to open the drawers and take pictures of everything that was included so I could know and plan accordingly, not just for what was in the kitchen, but then I knew what to plan in terms of meals or what was out of the question, because we have kind of some standard camping meals that we use and we know that work really well on the fly. Asking those questions, asking for additional pictures, don't feel like you're annoying. You are doing both the renter, the landlord, so to speak, and yourself a favor by getting clear about what it is you're looking for. And if it's not a good fit, it's not a good fit. And that can really be a make or break issue, is just the communication with the host or the landlord. I don't know what else to call an RV leaser. What is that? A dealer? It's not really a dealer. All of the little things I've learned through the reviews, even the check-in, check-out process, how well did they inform you about what you needed to know? Did you leave that lot feeling really comfortable and confident? Or if you had a breakdown, what was that experience like? All of those things are often revealed in the written reviews. So that in and of itself is a goldmine. And it's also, I'm going to get a little soapboxy, it's also, as a customer, why you leave a written review, especially in the sharing economy that we're in. I find the customer experience is so critical. And if you have a good experience, tell them that, but don't just say, yeah, it was great. Why was it great? Because you're helping so many other customers in the future understand, is this a good fit for us as well? So I'm a big proponent of leaving reviews. I guess I could put a plug in if you're willing to do that. And if I can test you on that, please leave a written review on this show. I'm sorry, that was kind of a side note. But now I'm going to go more general. Okay, so those are insider tips just in renting an RV. But before you even get to that point, there are a couple of other considerations I think you should be really aware of when it comes to camping, and especially with RVs or campers. And that is, know where you're going to park it. I mean this really honestly. I want you to know not only where are you going to park it to sleep at night, but also where are you going to park it when you go to your attraction. A lot of national parks, for example, have very limited capacity when it comes to campers. So if you're thinking you're going to get a 40-foot motorhome and then you're going to go to the Grand Canyon or to Bryce National Park, I mean, it might be a rude awakening when you get there and you can't find a spot to park, or you're going to have a lot of other angry people mad at you that you've blocked an access point for them. So just be aware. One little hack that we found related to travel rewards, when we do our big RV road trips, we don't tow a car. So when there's a spot, for example, we were in Redwood National Park a few years ago, we decided to rent a smaller car for the day. And it's relatively inexpensive when it's just for the day. And you can do last minute rentals pretty easy, assuming there's availability. So we were able to rent a car, able to do everything we wanted to do. We didn't have to haul around this big camper, and we were in and out of places relatively efficiently. So that is just a side note. My bigger point is know where you're going to park it. Where are you going? What's available? And even in terms of where you're going to park it at night in campsites, know the length both of your vehicle if you're towing or of your RV total. You need to know both the camper and the vehicle because a lot of sites are limited in terms of the length that you can be. So you want to know if you can park on the grass or anything that's related to that. Know where you're going to park it. All the hookups, all of those things are just really important that you start to at least a little research before you actually commit to a rental. There are some businesses that are pretty RV friendly. I am not a big proponent of parking in them and staying there overnight, but no, it's an option. Many casinos offer RV accommodations. I shouldn't even say accommodations. They are very friendly in terms of letting you park in their parking lot for a period of time. It may be overnight. It may not be overnight. I don't want to speak on behalf of all casinos. We've had pretty good luck just kind of parking and making lunch, taking a break from the road. Fred Meyer is a very camper-friendly community. And I would also say Walmarts can be, although I'm seeing a shift in some of the Walmarts around the country. So just a heads up there. Don't just assume because it's a Walmart, it's okay. There are some resources. Our next episode is actually going to be on RV life. I have some guests that are going to be talking more intently around some of the things to consider when you embrace RV life full time. So I don't want to steal their thunder, but we will also, if there's anything after that or after this episode, please come to the Ordinary Sherpa Facebook group because these are the perfect questions. I'd love to interact with you and have your questions answered. And if we need to do another Q&A episode or something with others in that group or in this space, we'd be more than willing to do that. So let us know what your questions are if we didn't address those. I think the two other aspects of camping that I would keep in mind, grand scheme, is just your timing. You're not going to be able to drive as fast or as far in a day with a camper as you are in a car. I might be understating that. There might be people who think that's a challenge. I'm not positioning it to be a challenge. It's just meant to say you're getting roughly 9 to 15 miles a gallon when you're driving a camper or pulling it, I guess. And you're just not going to be going 80 miles an hour down the highway. Generally speaking, again, I'm sure there's people that do. I'm not suggesting this is a challenge. Maintain your expectations. Is that realistic for what your limitations are? And having breaks and things of that nature are just important to consider. I know people that have driven 30 hours straight and that sounds miserable. So I hope you, if you've had one of those experiences, bless you. I'm so sorry. And if you're one of those people who thinks I'm just going to push through and get there, that might not set your adventure up for the best experience. So you might want to reconsider it. We often will do that on the way home because we're so anxious to get home. And even then, it's not ideal. So know what your limitations are in terms of timing, how long, how far you can go in a day. And last but not least, storage capacity. While RVs do allow much more storage than maybe camping do, just keep in mind what those options are. We had an experience where it wasn't until kind of the last minute I was starting to pack. We were traveling out west and I was packing a suitcase, a hard-sided suitcase. And it kind of came to me like, where am I going to put this once we get there? We don't have a ton of storage and I don't really want a suitcase sitting in the living room all the time. We probably could have made it work, but in the last moment I was like, wait, we need all collapsible duffel bags. So be aware of what the storage options are, what you can bring with you. It's not only a fun exercise in minimalism, but it's also just a fun exercise in making sure once you get there, things will fit appropriately and you'll be comfortable. Given that we're coming off of 2020, I think we probably have more people on Earth camping now than ever. And so I'm doing this episode in January on purpose because I figured if I waited until March, most of the campsites for the rest of the summer will be booked. I would encourage you, if this is something that sounds intriguing, start planning it now. Consider what sites you want to go to, what your itinerary might look like, what's really the items on your list. I'd be more than willing to walk through these things personally if you want to message me on any of those items. Please let us know. Come to the Ordinary Sherpa group, post your questions in the Facebook group, and really, I invite you to jump on the camping opportunity. Never have we had a more opportune time to embrace camping, and you get to define what camping looks like for you, just like you get to define adventure. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It doesn't have to be an RV rental. It's a fun way to just add something different, to change up the norm, and to make it a little more adventurous. All right, key takeaways from this episode. Number one, camping takes you out of your normal environment, allowing you to stretch and be safely uncomfortable. Number two, what is your icon to adventure? What would the profile picture be for you? If it's not camping, decide what it is and go after it. Number three, the spectrum of camping can be broad. Choose the entry point that works best for you. Number four, camping creates the opportunity for forced together time by nature of proximity and space. Number five, sometimes magic is in the dirt. Life can be dirty and messy, so having experiences that aren't prim, proper, and perfect are healthy lessons. Number six, rentals are a great way to try before you buy. Create the experience without the major investment. Number seven, there are some hidden fees to dig into with the rental price. Know what your budget is and stick to it. Hidden fees can include mileage, items such as kitchenware, bedding, generator usage, and insurance. Number eight, reviews from customers are a gold mine. Read the reviews to inform insider tips and experiences. Help yourself and all future customers by leaving specific written reviews about your own experience. Number nine, ask questions. Everything from fees to cleaning expectations, layout. Ask for pictures. Be clear up front so you have a good experience on the road. Number 10, book sooner than later. The Earth is seeing a record number of people camping, which looks like it will continue into the summer of 2021. There's a couple of links to discounts for you to use for both Outdoorsy and RV Share. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey. I hope this episode inspired you to explore camping as a part of your adventure story in 2021 and beyond. If you found value from today's show, here are three easy ways you can support us. Subscribe to Ordinary Sherpa Podcast on the platform you're listening to. It lets the providers know that you're getting value from the show and want to be around when we release additional content. If you feel compelled, leave us a review. Two, find your friends, family, and others you think would enjoy this show and share this episode. Three, and most importantly, join the community of families interested in creating authentic experiences through simple adventures by going to ordinarysherpa.com/community. We want to hear from you and create content that would benefit your family. Thanks for joining us on this journey as we help families connect through adventure.